This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you. We are live in West Palm Beach, Florida. Astros, Mets. We will be in Port St. Lucie today for that. Be following us on social media, both the station and our individual social medias as well.
Yeah. We might see some Juan Soto today, maybe.
Maybe.
Possibly.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We should know the projected Astros lineup soon, which I'm guessing means we should know the Mets lineup soon.
Who's a better baseball player, Juan Soto or Cam Smith? Go.
Cam Smith so far in spring training, Seth.
That's all I just know. What have you done for me lately? That's what I like.
Totally,
to look
man.
At.
That's this society these days.
I think he's more cost effective in terms of spring training.
Got a cooler mom.
Yeah.
For sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I've never even talked to Juan Soto's mom. She wouldn't even give me the time of day.
She wouldn't take my calls.
It was like Cam Smith. We had a delightful conversation with Cam Smith's mom and her friends.
It was so pleasant.
It is my favorite. It's so much fun. That's one of my favorite things about training camp with the Texans is seeing some of the parents and just seeing how – of the rookies.
Yeah.
Like, and just seeing how excited they are. And I told you, CJ's mom – you know, her son played at Ohio State. He's been in big moments and everything. And a lot of parents are like this. Their kids have played at big-time schools, but this is the NFL.
Yeah.
And it's so kind of mind-bending in a lot of ways that you can see how they're just wide-eyed about the whole experience.
Well, Will Anderson's family, too.
Yeah.
You know, with his parents and all the sisters and everything. And apparently they've become friendly with the Strouds.
Yeah.
You know, like, it does have a collegial feel to it in a way, you know?
Well, and so with Cam Smith's mom, think about that. He was playing college ball this time last year. So this is his first spring training. So this is the first time she got to see him in a major league uniform and do all that and being like, it's kind of like, it's a little miniature major league experience when you go out there. They're wearing the Astros uniforms and you're playing against actual major leaguers for them, you know, at least half of them. It's mind bending.
And he's living in his house that he grew up in.
Yeah.
And so he's going, like, do you think he goes home in his uniform? Like, he pulls into the driveway.
She does his laundry.
Do you think that she drives him home in the back seat? Like, they stop on the way home?
Stop for McDonald's.
Yeah, like a Happy Meal, but like seven Happy Meals.
I wonder if when he got up in the morning the first day, he like forgot what his routine was, and he just went out and waited for the bus.
Yeah.
He's just sitting out there with
Honey, why is Cam standing at the end of the driveway?
His bag and his backpack.
Yeah. It's got his uniform on, Astros ball cap.
I bet he drives himself there, but it would be cooler if his mom drove him.
And he was in the back seat.
Yeah, and dropped him off.
Have a good day, sweetie.
Have a good day at baseball school.
Yeah, have fun at baseball school.
My friend in college used to drop me off, and my roommate, he had a car and I didn't, and he'd always drop me off and say, have a nice day at college.
That's what I always do whenever I drop any of my buddies. At college.
Did I have a nice day at college? It always made me laugh every time.
That's funny. Yeah, right. It was always funny.
Have a great day at college, Seth.
That's funny. Nick Caserio and the Texans are in Indianapolis. We're here in West Palm Beach thanks to Exclusive Furniture and Academy Sports and Outdoors. The Texans are in Indianapolis trying to find the next generation of Houston Texans. How does the team view the draft. What's their philosophy? How do they view roster building? Caserio answered a lot of questions about that yesterday in Indianapolis, and he said something to the media yesterday that he said to Seth and I many times in our conversations.
We heard it first.
Yeah.
We hit that first, yeah.
Sorry, national media. But here's Caserio talking about the windows.
We've talked about this. We look at the team building kind of in a two-year kind of window, our 25, 26, where are we, what can we do? It doesn't mean, well, if we don't win enough games in that 2 years, then we're going to blow everything up. So just trying to be strategic, trying to make good, smart decisions along the way. You have to understand you're going to draft, you're going to have young players. Okay, if you're going to keep young players, okay, other players are going to have to roll off. So what's that balance? That's kind of the game that everybody's kind of playing.
And Nick is heading into, like, the rush hour traffic of that now.
Well,
with Stingley potentially this year and with CJ and Will potentially next year.
Well, and I think the other part of it too is that's where you start to get in a little bit of the best player available discussion about taking it. And this is where I like the way Nick operates because it's a lot easier. It's a lot easier to figure out his strategy in terms of best player available, because the way it usually works is teams say, no, we take the best player available, and then lo and behold, it seems like most teams take a player in a position of need. Nick, I think, has specific groups of players that he likes. He'll talk about his bands of players and everything, but because he's so active trading up and down, I think it's lots of times he's putting himself in a position to where he'll be able to take the best player available at that spot happens to be one of the position groups that they need.
Yeah.
And in an ideal world, that's how it works out. If you can't maneuver, that's when it might end up being more like, all right, hey, Blake Fisher or whomever else, that's the best player available. You can always use more good young prospects, so you take that guy. And because he's so fluid, it's really hard to mock draft the Texans because I don't think – what are the chances he stays at 25?
I would say less than 50-50.
Yeah.
He moves around so much.
Yeah.
And I'm not even – he can move up or down. I'm not even saying trade back.
You
know, like he could – they may – now, if they trade up, it'll be the night of the draft. You know, there'll be a guy slipping, and they'll – if they trade back, I think, that's more about accumulating. Like, trading back is more of a, like, leading up to the days before the draft, just trying to accumulate picks. Moving up, unless you're moving up to, like, one or two to go get a quarterback – that's something more that probably happens on the night of the draft.
Remember the big surprise for every – that's the other thing that happens every year too, is if you try to gauge or anticipate exactly how the trades are going to go. You know, Nick said last year when they traded for Stephon Diggs and when they were in the second round, they thought it was going to be easier to trade back up in the first round than it was. And a lot of – that was the common experience of a lot of teams last year. All of a sudden, like, man, teams are having a hard time trading up within the first round or up into
the
first
round. Yeah, you got to find a trade partner, man.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm greedy. I want a first-round pick.
Well, when are the times – like the times where – I think the only times that really matter to fans that teams are drafting for need versus best player available are probably the first 2 days of the draft.
Yeah.
Like, by the time you're drafting on day three, I really do feel like you're going best player. You're talking scratch-off tickets.
Well, I know a lot of teams do start to go more for need at the middle rounds because it is a scratch off, and that, like, there's less distinction between,
right,
all right, how do we actually say who's the best – the best player available in the fourth round when it's such a wild card.
No, for sure. I guess in terms of, like, fans getting emotionally getting emotionally moved one way or the other about it, because I think of, like, I think of two when I think of Nick. Two picks, and they were both on day two. But his very first pick as the Texans GM, Davis Mills.
Yeah.
You know, like, that was –
widely lambasted.
Widely lambasted for picking Davis Mills. And I think, like, the Davis Mills pick to me has worked out fine. He's your backup quarterback.
Because the whole problem with that was it was the first pick you had in the draft.
Yeah.
And people – there were some people on the outside. Like, remember Rich Eisen acting like they already have a quarterback. His name's Deshaun Watson.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, way to stay dialed in on the news cycle, Rich Eisen.
Yeah.
So that – I think the biggest thing immediately post-draft – the grades, both emotionally and the fans and then the people giving the grades, we're thinking in that regard because you want to look at it. And in your mind, you're like, oh, yeah, this guy's going to start at defensive tackle. And then this draft pick will definitely start at tight end. And it's easier to put the fantasy together in your brain.
Yep.
So, when they drafted a quarterback in the third round, which is dicey always, it felt like, wait, no, I'm trying to build this team in my brain here.
For a team that needed everything.
Yeah.
You know, for a team that needed everything. And then the other one, obviously, is Blake Fisher last year.
Yeah.
That was a big curveball.
I mean, the biggest mistake we all make emotionally after the draft is you – in your your mind the first six picks. You think of him like, oh, that guy's definitely starting.
Yep.
Oh, sure, yeah. He'll still rotate in a defensive tackle. And it doesn't work that way.
No, it doesn't. Although DeMeco was pretty clear at his media session a couple days ago, and he's like, if we draft you in the first round, you're expected to be a day one starter.
Well, that's what they're hoping for. That's what they're looking for, is a day one starter. It does that. There's a subtle difference there between guaranteeing that he's going to start versus drafting you because we think you can be a day one starter. But then it's a second round pick, it's a 50-50 shot that the guy becomes a full-time starter. Third round, it goes down to about a 33% chance.
Nick Caserio at the Combine, are you seeing more ready for NFL prospects?
It's case by case. I would see, you've kind of seen the players that have played a lot of football. You're looking at, go through the play history, and some of these players started 40 games, 50 games. You get better at football by playing football. It doesn't mean if you're an underclassman, you've played less games, doesn't mean you can't be successful. Let's say Nico Collins is a good example in our case, where basically he played 2 years of college football, missed his third year, had some traits that we liked, and I'd say he worked and to put himself in the position that he's in. So I think we're cognizant of the landscape of college football. It doesn't necessarily change our calculus, change about how we go about evaluating players. But when you see them play, you just want to see them play football. And sometimes they're a little bit more physically and mentally ready. Some players are further along. Some players might be behind. It doesn't mean they can't catch up. That's part of our job and responsibility, to create an infrastructure for the players. So when they come here, what are the things that they need to be successful? And then that's part of the job of the coaching staff as well, is to put the players in the position to go out there and be successful. So it's definitely evolved. We're certainly aware and cognizant of it, but it doesn't necessarily shifted how we view players.
I think that might be one of the reasons that Nick tends to prefer, or is pretty much exclusively preferred, big school guys, is that, okay, you play against a higher level of competition more routinely and get a lot of reps, you're going to be a better football player on average, and maybe play more immediately. And he's saying that as he's also talking in that other clip about having a 2-year window. Mm-hmm. And the other thing too is, there's just, with the modern CBA, there's just so much less time to practice and work with your players than there used to be.
Yeah.
That one of the reasons Nick might do that might not even be as much about evaluation as like, okay, on average, these guys are going to be more ready to play in the NFL. Mm-hmm. They're just going to be better because they've played more tough, highly elite competition. And in a 2-year window, you want these guys to play as soon as possible.
It's probably slightly easier to scout too, I would imagine. Like, it's easier to watch a guy.
You're going against common
Georgia
opponents.
Yeah,
and
like a guy from Georgia going against LSU guys. It's easier to kind of translate, like, the film and envision in your mind what this guy is like going against NFL. I'm not saying that all college guys are NFL caliber players, but easier than a guy like Gray Zabel against South Dakota State.
No, there's like, if you go to a Division I AA type school or FCS school or something, there's some things that you're going to do well just because you're physically more gifted, but it's hard to tell exactly how that measures up. You don't have a huge sample size of guys playing against that level of competition. There's lots of guys that would look impressive, so it's more speculation.
All right, one more from Caserio here on draft philosophy. This is a good one here. The cost benefit of trading picks for veteran players.
Yeah, there's always a cost. There's an opportunity cost associated with doing something. So, okay, said player, here's the cost associated with them, whether it's a contract, whether it's draft compensation. Do you feel the player is worth that, whatever the opposing team is asking? Trades are always, it takes two to tango. So we could think one thing, they could think another thing. If it matches up, in a Diggs case is a good example. So we felt comfortable with that. We thought it made sense. We thought it was the right value, so we went ahead and did it. What's going to look like this year? I'm not sure. So we'll go through this process here. So, again, I think we're very case by case. Look at the situation. Take the information in. All right, if we make this decision, what's at the expense of? All right, what are the alternatives? What's the next best option? And that's kind of how we'll approach it.
Takes two to tango. And he tangoed with Brandon Bean on that one.
He did.
What's the tango look like?
With the dance, the tango?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It feels like it's like a sexually charged dance, isn't it? It's a lot of like
tango. It's a lot of action, I think.
It's passionate.
Yeah.
So I like when NFL, big tough guy NFL guys talk about.
So Nick Caserio.
Hey, it takes two to tango.
Right.
Get on over here and put on your dancing shoes.
Come on, Brandon. Let's go. Let's tango.
Got my tightest dress on.
Let's tango, baby. Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to trade. There will be a trade sometime in the next 3 weeks.
Really?
I don't know. When's the draft? Sometime between now
late
and
late April. Free agency, I think Nick dropped March 10th, I think, is the date free agency starts.
Yeah.
That'll be.
So we've got 2 months. We've got about 2 months before the draft.
Yeah.
There will be at least one trade between now and then.
There are a lot of guys available, man. I mean, we were talking about him yesterday. You know, available via trade.
Yeah.
You know, and Harold Landry has permission to go find a trade. We poured cold water on that for the Texans for obvious reasons. They don't need an edge rusher. Jonathan Allen's intriguing. Any of the wide receivers are intriguing. We workshopped a Garrett Wilson trade yesterday, and I came up with a scenario where they just basically rent him for a year.
Yeah.
They get a one-year lease on Garrett Wilson.
How did the text line respond to that? Because I felt like you were trying way too hard on that one. You had a grand plan to trade for Garrett Wilson and then trade him away next year.
My grand plan wasn't to definitely do that. It was merely pointing out that that is an option if you do trade for him. You don't have to pay him.
Right.
You know,
you don't have to give him that big contract.
You don't have to give him that big. Now
there's
a lot of
moving parts there. If he has a disappointing season, if he gets injured.
Now, if he's agitating for a contract already, then I don't want to trade for him. If he's open to coming, if he just wants to get the hell out of New York, which is definitely on the board, I would say, and especially he's coming to a team that has C.J. Stroud, his former teammate, then he may not be agitated. He may feel like, okay, I'm going to go here and have a big year and get paid by somebody.
This is where the NFL players have to get together. The NFLPA has to look at the way baseball does it, where the guaranteed contracts aren't because the CBA says they'll be guaranteed. It's because that's the precedent. But one of the things that keeps owners feeling comfortable about it is that guys don't agitate for new contracts, or generally it's rare that they agitate for a trade.
Yeah.
So when you trade for a player, he's going to come and he's going to play for you. When you give a guy a contract, he's going to play that contract out. And NFL players will whine and complain about not having guaranteed contracts. Like, for one, it's just a different sport and the injuries are a lot bigger. But two, we've gotten into this zone where all of a sudden teams are having to renegotiate with guys all the time.
Yeah.
And as a former player myself, that tends to side with players on contract disputes. Now I'm getting annoyed. Now I'm just, it's just too much. This expectation that now I get a new deal. No, like you just use, if it's your rookie deal, that's a whole different scenario because your hands are tied.
Right.
But when you sign,
when you're
a free agent and you have a choice in the matter and you sign that deal, I'm like, just play out the freaking deal.
Yeah.
If the team comes to you and wants to do more, but don't threaten a holdout or anything on a veteran renegotiation.
Yeah, Tyreek. All right? We're talking to you.
I'm turning into a grumpy old man.
Yeah.
R.I.P. Gene Hackman, by the way.
Yeah, how about that story?
He's 95 years old. His dog were all found dead?
Yes. His wife was in her 60s.
Yeah.
He was 95. And his dog, I don't know how old the dog was, but they were all found dead in their bedroom.
Ian Rappaport is claiming it was just a coincidence.
The
initial report said that it was that there's no foul play suspected. I haven't read up on this. If there's no foul play suspected, it sounds like a carbon monoxide leak.
The dog is a bit of the tell, right?
Something
is up.
Like wealthy 68-year-old women don't tend to die in the middle of the night without a pre-existing condition.
He was 95, she was 64.
64, excuse me.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's very weird. And it's a shame because obviously it's also, it's two human lives, but it's Gene Hackman.
Everybody knows. I like Gene Hackman. 90. I didn't know he was 95.
Yeah. He hasn't worked in a while, but he was doing so well on into his 80s that people were kind of surprised he wasn't working because I don't think they realized that he was 95 years old.
Right.
He's like, let the man retire. Jeez.
What's your favorite Gene Hackman movie?
I guess, The Unforgiven.
The Unforgiven?
Yeah.
Okay.
I know you're going to say Hoosiers.
My three favorites are in no particular order. Hoosiers, the first Superman. He was Lex Luthor in the Superman movies.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And I thought he was great in The Birdcage with Robin Williams.
He was the dad in The Birdcage,
right? He was
right?
A very conservative politician.
He's an actual congressman or something, right?
Yeah. And his daughter is marrying Robin Williams' son of a gay couple.
I'll tell you what. Royal Tannenbaums is up there, though, too.
Yeah.
And I know you're not a big Wes Anderson guy.
Yeah, I've never seen
that. But his character in that is hilarious. Mostly because he reminded me a lot of my dad. That was 2001. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, like it's like the the People magazine article. You know, People does this thing with these articles with famous people where they refer to them by their name for like the first paragraph, and then for the rest of the article, it's like the French Connection actor. They don't refer, you know, they like know. The whole rest of the article.
They're trying to get like the little tidbits in there, and a link to the French Connection.
And this article mentions at least like 8 or 9 of his movies, and Hoosiers isn't mentioned in here.
Really?
In this People magazine, they mentioned
the French Connection, but not Hoosiers.
The French Connection, Superman, The Royal Tenenbaums. I have no problem with any of those. Ants. He was a voice in the movie Ants. Back in 1998, he was in The Birdcage was 1996. The Birdcage is almost 30 years old. That's crazy. Welcome to Mooseport. He retired from acting after 2004's Welcome to Mooseport.
That was his final film.
His final film was Welcome to Mooseport. But nowhere
so
does it say.
He hasn't done a film in 21 years.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it's
he will
been
not
that
be
long.
Doing any more. We're done.
I'm just looking at like a career that spanned from 1960. His first credit is Mad Dog Kahl. Mad Dog Collie? I don't know what it is. In 1961. And then he did a TV series in 1961.
That's a hell of a run, man.
Yeah, man.
That's a hell of a run. Sad story, man. Sad story.
Well, sad that given the circumstances.
Yeah.
I mean, if he passed away and he's 95, then that's...
Oh, yeah, no, 95. 95 is a good run. Yeah, but no, like, but there's... The wife and the dog, it's not good. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, I wrote a piece for the Houston Press yesterday about the Astros. 4 upgraded performances that I think can get the Astros from this 86.5 win murkiness that they are right now back to where we're used to having them.
Give it to me.
Which of these are most likely?
Okay.
We'll do that coming up next.
From an author. Ooh. Author Sean Pendergast. He wrote something.
Journalist.
No.
Journo.
And now, 2 pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's. So thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy!
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The march to spring training and opening day is upon us. Rob Bradford from Baseball Isn't Boring here, and we'll have you covered every single day with podcasts that aim to educate, entertain, and inform you as a baseball fan. Follow Baseball Isn't Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, we're live in West Palm Beach. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you. I think I'm finally starting to feel like 100%, and we're going to be leaving tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'm starting to feel good.
You had less of a death rattle to your cough this morning, I noticed, when I woke up at like 3:30 a.m. I heard it was more of a – I was like, oh, it sounds like he's going to make it.
I think I'm going to make it, yeah. And by the time I'm back to full strength, we'll be right back in Houston.
The way you were going, like if it were back in the 1800s or something, you know, when they were I would have kind of been worried about you.
You wrote me off earlier.
I was like, you're not going to – yeah, well, you're not going to be able to help out with the farm work for at least a few weeks.
The guy's useless.
Less than half the time the kid dies when it sounds like this in 1875.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. You were no good to us.
Right, right. My WAR, worker above replacement score, would have been negative.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I was about to put a musket between your eyes because you're draining you're a drain on the family
Right,
farm.
Right, right. Yeah. So we thank Exclusive Furniture and Academy Sports and Outdoors for sending us here. We'll be out in Port St. Lucie today for the Astros and the Mets. We're looking forward to that. Speaking of the Astros, so I wrote an article for the Houston Press, Seth, that dropped, I think, today. And I was thinking, like, the Astros are thought to be like an 86-win team.
Yeah.
They're coming off a season where they're an 88-win team last year, 2 years removed from being, I think, a 90-win team 2 years ago. They have settled into a tier below where they were throughout the glory days. I think that's fair to say, right?
That's fair.
It's fair.
That's fine.
It's just data.
Yeah, whatever, Sean. But, it's fair.
So they've kind of settled in there, which is not the worst place to be. And they're still in position, I think, where they can get back there at least for a year. I don't know if they'll be able to do it for 5 or 6 consecutive years. But they're going to need – at this point, we know they're going to – if they're going to do it, it's going to come from within for now. So I had four potential performances that could add a few wins to the Astros. And if all of them happen, maybe we're back around 98, 100 wins. You know, like a good – win above replacement for a player is anywhere from like 3.5 to 4. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
So these four things, the first two are ones that you and I have talked about pretty extensively this week. But I do bring it up again. The return of the 2021 Lance McCullers.
Oh, yeah. No big deal.
No big deal.
Yeah.
Again, I'm acknowledging in this article that these are things that are potential, to varying degrees, potential outliers.
Yeah.
But Lance in the news has been good lately. You know, the news has been good with the bullpens, and he's getting ready to throw against live hitters. If you get the Lance McCullers from 2021 back, you're getting a guy with an ERA in the twos or the low threes. I think I got the wrong year in this article here. I think he was a low three ERA guy in 2021, and he won 13 games.
Yeah.
So you get that one back, and I think that adds a few wins to the ledger, above over whoever he would be, who would be starting in that spot in the rotation.
Yeah, I think the whole thing about, like, Lance, is there anything mechanically or with his throwing motion or anything that's going to be different to keep him from having all of these same issues?
He supposedly has been watching the film pretty close.
I know. There'd been a lot of the real throwing junkies would talk for a long time about kind of the angle of his hand as he on his windup, his back foot, all this stuff that put a little bit more stress on him anatomically with the way he throws the baseball. And Lance was always very adamant that that wasn't the case and that wasn't an issue.
Yeah.
But I am curious about the tweaks he's made, perhaps the minor tweaks that maybe this time around he doesn't have all
the
time.
He doesn't have the, it's not the same stress on the arm. Number two, and I mentioned Chaz McCormick getting back to some semblance of what he was in 2023, where he was really good. He had an ERA, or not ERA, he had an OPS in the mid-800s. He was 840 OPS guy. He was an everyday player. 22 home runs, 70 RBIs.
We're out here at spring training, and we committed to overreacting to everything.
Yeah.
And right now, what we've seen of Chaz McCormick hasn't been so hot.
No.
So he and Jake Myers both.
Yeah.
We're not. Did you even put Jake Myers in your five things that could happen?
Come on, man. It's only four, and I'm not adding a fifth with Jake Myers. You know where I stand.
Why don't you have the guts to say what nobody else will say?
That would be guts.
So Jake Myers is going to be just fine at the plate.
Well, the thing about both of these two, the first two, are that we've seen these are not things we've seen both of these things before.
Yeah.
You know, these are the return of something that we've seen before. The next two are interesting, and I think, like, that finally the third one here, these are four things that could get the Astros, they all happen, back to being in the high 90s or maybe a 100-win team again, is that full season MVP level Yordan Alvarez game wrecker shows up.
Uh-huh.
No oblique injuries, no hand injuries. He's averaged 135 games played each of the over the last four seasons. He needs to be playing 150 or more. He's going to be a full-time DH. I'm sure he'll get some reps in left field, but it sounds like his focus is going to be purely on hitting, which I'm anxious to see because he likes playing left field. The numbers bear out that he's a pretty good hitter when he plays defense in those games.
Yeah,
also.
I think that but it also – he likes it, and he thinks he's, you know, better when it keeps him more engaged and everything.
Yeah.
But he's also felt the grind of the long seasons and how much it's affected. Ultimately, the main thing is keeping him healthy.
Yes.
As long as possible. So, hey, a little bit better. Oh, you know what? Those numbers, I think Chandler Rome had a good breakdown of that. It was either him or Kawahara. That, like, over the last couple years, it's balanced out more. And
when he's playing left field and when
he's
DH-ing?
Yeah, there's not as big of a difference as it looked like 2 years ago. That it's just, like, sometimes in a given year, yeah, those splits look more impressive than they
Yeah, like,
are.
There's zero question Yordan Alvarez is one of the best hitters in the sport. There's,
yeah.
Like, he's top four in weighted runs created, which is an advanced stat. It's like him, Soto, Shohei, and one other person. But he needs to stay healthy.
Probably Cam Smith.
He needs to stay healthy. And if he can stay healthy, if he can play 152, 155 games, and I'd rather he be batting. I know last year we were all into the, hey, Yordan's batting second, because that's the new chic thing to do with your best hitter is bat him in the two-hole. I put him at cleanup. Altuve's going to bat leadoff.
Reyes,
we know that.
He's a nice guy to have at second. Gets on base a
yes.
lot. Really good judgment, all that.
Works counts. Yordan gets to see more of the pitcher, while he's standing in the on-deck circle or from the dugout. And then I guess I'd probably put Christian Walker at three. My guess is Yordan probably bats third behind Paredes and Altuve. But, put him in a – he had 35 home runs and 86 RBIs last year. Like, that's a weird – ratio for somebody that had 35 home runs.
Yeah.
So put him in a spot in the order where he's going to come up with more guys on base, especially with this bottom of the order at 7, 8, and 9 right now, you know? So true MVP level Yordan Alvarez for 150-plus games. I don't think that's a huge ask.
No.
That's much less of an ask than the first
ask.
Two.
Yeah, it's a much more realistic ask.
Yep. Last one.
It's a nice ask.
Thank you. Got some nice
She's
ask.
Got a great ask.
Got a great ask. Jeremy Peña takes the next step.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so when we watched Carlos leave, Peña was a bit of a mystery. We didn't know what we were getting with Peña. We knew he did a lot of good things in the minor league. His rookie year, he hit 22 home runs. He hasn't hit that mark since. He looks like he should. He's yoked. His stolen bases have gone up each year. He stole 20 bases last year. He's been a Gold Glover. It feels like all these things that he's done, he's never done them all at the same time.
Right. Well, even last year,
can he
year,
be
though,
a 25-25 guy offensively and then go win a Gold Glove again?
A lot of it is just, hopefully in hindsight you look at it, you're reminded, it's hard to play Major League Baseball. And there was a lot of stuff that he had to figure out all at once. The fielding stuff is strange just because he continued to make really impressive plays last year defensively. He just had odd and curious errors that seemed – almost out of, like, they didn't make any sense at times. And that's where I feel that whether it's youth or putting too much pressure on himself or whatever it might be, I feel confident he's going to work his way out of that because you still see the upside.
Yeah.
And it's not like a lack of effort or anything. Kyle Tucker, the last couple of years, I don't know if he even cared about defense.
Yeah.
He just wasn't the same guy out there. Jeremy Peña very much cares. Jeremy Peña has got a much higher swarm factor than Kyle Tucker.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he would be a D'Amico Ryans guy.
Yeah.
Jeremy Peña. That's what it would say on his scouting report. D'Amico Ryans guy.
Mm-hmm. Kyle Tucker would be citing his own PFF scores all the time.
Yeah. Walking over and just playing music in the clubhouse. He's the DJ.
Talking to some beat reporter and convincing him that the PFF scores are super important.
Yes, yes. So Sean is the text message. Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. So Sean, basically in your scenario, you're saying the Astros need to discover a time machine.
Yeah.
For two of them, yeah.
Yeah, that's all.
For two of them.
Back to 2021.
Yep. Sorry to be that guy, but that's not how war works. I don't know if I even said how war works in this, but I cited war.
What did you cite war about?
I just cited, like, you know, what's a good, you know, good win above replacement for a player. Yeah, like 3.5 to 4,
uh-huh.
You know, something like that. So I was just kind of like, yeah, these guys can get to, get a few more wins above replacement.
Yeah.
You know, that tacks a few more wins onto the Astros. Maybe that's not
how it works. Citing, you don't correlate it to specific wins. Just stop being that dude. All right, Texter,
He apologized up front. He said, sorry to be that guy.
Oh, to be that guy.
That makes me even angrier, actually.
Okay, no. Because he didn't just say sorry. He said sorry to be that guy.
Yeah.
So he knows, that's key. If he had just said sorry, that's not how war works.
Yeah.
That's the tone I would have heard it.
Yeah.
He said, sorry to be that guy, Sean, but that's not quite how war works, okay?
That's not how I picture
it. He's being helpful there.
Is he?
Yeah.
Okay. A lot of people weighing in on what their favorite Gene Hackman movie is, and I am disgusted with myself. I'm more disgusted with myself about this than anything I just said about war.
Yeah.
That The Replacements did not crack my top three. It does.
Was The Replacements a good movie?
No, and that's what made it so awesome. Yeah. No, it was cheesy as hell. I forgot about Gene Hackman being in it because that was like, am I getting paid in cash, Gene Hackman?
Was Keanu Reeves?
Yes.
Okay.
He was Footsteps Falco.
The star of that movie was that Australian punter, right? Or was he British? Well, whatever he was. He's like
with the gambling problem?
Addict.
Yeah. Yeah.
That guy was awesome.
He was great. That had a young Jon Favreau in it as a linebacker, I believe. That had a young Roy from The Office in it as a deaf tight end,
Is Roy the boyfriend?
Roy's Pam's first boyfriend. Yeah,
fiance.
Kind of a jerk. Yeah.
He's deaf in that movie?
He's deaf. Yeah.
What was Jon Favreau playing?
He was like a maniacal middle linebacker. Yeah.
Psychotic.
Yeah. It's got every stereotypical football character from the 80s and 90s in it.
What was Keanu Reeves' story? He was just a bunch of injuries had done him in or something.
I forget.
I get that role mixed up with Point Break because he plays an ex-football player in that.
Isn't that a surfing
movie?
It's
not believable. Yeah, but he's an undercover FBI agent.
Oh.
But this thing, he's an undercover FBI agent who also happened to have been a star college quarterback.
Why does that matter?
I don't know, but it just makes it – why does it matter to me?
No, why does it matter that he was a star quarterback and he's an FBI agent?
I think probably – I never made it through the movie, probably because he's super athletic or something
okay.
or everything. But he's like very notable. He's very notable, for somebody who's trying to be undercover and everything. People are like – but of course, this was back before the days of the internet when somebody would have been like, hey, what's Johnny Utah up to these days?
Johnny Utah. Yeah. Oh, that's good.
Yeah. Patrick Swayze couldn't just look up and see that he works for the FBI.
Can't watch Hoosiers. Barbara Hershey is out of Hackman's league.
Barbara Hershey
was like the really prudish teacher at the school.
Yeah.
That eventually Gene Hackman was able to break down that wall.
Did they end up having a romantic relationship?
They did. They smooched a lot. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Was there a love scene?
I don't. No, God, I hope not. No, it's Hackman and Hershey. not high up on my power rankings of love scenes. All right. Payne and Pendergast, people weighing in on the Astros take right there that we just had, that I just had as well. You can go find that article on the Houston Press. Up next, a former player, former Texan, who suffered a traumatic, very similar to Tank Dell knee injury, gives us some insight as to what exactly Tank Dell is going to be going through here in the near future. We will hear that. Coming up next.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
We are live in West Palm Beach. I would imagine we'll be hearing from Adam Spolane shortly. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you. Spo over at the ballpark this morning getting some audio. We'll be headed out to Port St. Lucie this afternoon to go watch the Astros take on the Mets. Colton Gordon on the mound for the Astros. We'll circle back to some more Astro talk in the 9 o'clock hour. We expect to hear from Spo as well, find out what's going on. Everybody anticipating the big Altuve to left field. The first live rounds for Jose Altuve out in left field tomorrow.
All the reports are that he's looked really good fielding the ball. When it comes to throwing the ball in, the most concerning thing is that the Jeremy Pena's had to set up a little bit deeper in the outfield.
Can't wait to see how deep.
So Altuve can apparently try to throw a grounder to him roll it underhand to him.
Yep.
What if Altuve's arm actually? What if we find out at the end of the day that as Altuve's arm had been in very poor shape this last year, he was one of the weakest arms in the infield in the league. What if there was something that made it even worse?
An injury or something?
Yeah.
Oh, if we found out he was banged up,
that'd freak me out.
It would.
No, most well, I, Yeah, it would. Would it not freak you out?
No, well, not if he's not hurt anymore. Like, if I found out he was injured last year.
If
that's
it was
why
one of the things that precipitated this move, though. No, if he got, like, injured in the offseason or something realized, or, yeah, he had some kind of condition.
I mean, it's, like, it's just bad. It's just, you know, okay, that's why it's bad. So, like, here's what I'm rooting for tomorrow, Seth. I actually am rooting for the Astros to put the pitchers to put a couple guys on base so we can see this. I'm actually rooting for.
Well, it sounds like you're rooting for Altuve not to do that great. I don't want to see him.
No,
on
I
base.
Want to see.
I
want to
see them with nice hits out to left field and Altuve. Oh, but you want him? You want to see him throw in?
I want to see what it looks like with him. Yeah, I want to see him try to mow somebody down at third or at home or something like that.
Oh yeah,
that'd be great.
If he does the finger gun afterwards. That can be the best thing ever. I'm sure.
Then gets suspended.
I'm sure it's outlawed in baseball, like it is in all of sports.
Suspended because of gun violence.
Can we talk about how dumb the finger gun ban is? You can do two. Are we not allowed to say, like, let's kill them? You know, like, let's kill these guys. Can we not talk it or use any kind of metaphors at all for anything?
I feel like we're headed towards an America is soft here. And so
No, not at all. I understand the reasoning behind it.
Yeah.
But there is, it's a finger gun.
Yeah.
Like, if you ever in your life thought that, like, oh my gosh. Did you see what Seth just did to Clint as he was saying goodbye?
Yeah.
He pretended to shoot him.
He pointed a finger gun at
him. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Especially when it's like somebody that's happy, too.
Yeah.
Like, I just scored a touchdown.
Pew-pew.
Finger guns.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. He's trying to kill everybody.
We
can't let this happen. Not in America.
No.
My God.
It is silly. It is very silly.
It's the silliest thing that's ever happened anywhere.
All right. Let's get to Cecil Shorts. He was on with Will Kunkel of Fox 26. This is where I remind everybody to be sure to watch the show on YouTube and Twitch.
I just shot Sean 27 times.
And the bullets bounce right off of my chest.
Amazing. He's still healthy and alive.
Superman, man. I'm Superman.
I'm a witness, Sean. I got you.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Colin. Cecil Shorts, former Texans wide receiver, suffered a gruesome knee injury, very similar to Tank Dell's knee injury that Tank suffered back in week 16 against the Chiefs. Cecil was on with Will Kunkel on Kicking It with Kunkel on Fox 26, and this was a little insight from Cecil Shorts as to how this thing may play out with Tank.
I hate to say it about Tank. I don't think Tank will be back next year after that injury.
I've talked to some people that think.
I'll be honest with you right now. I had that same exact knee injury.
Mm. You dislocated your...
I dislocated my knee.
And then tore ACL, MCL, LCL.
I tore ACL, MCL, PCL, LCL, meniscus. I tore pretty much everything in my knee. And it ended my career. I was older. I was in my later 20s. Mm-hmm. And Tank's a much better receiver than me. But just experiencing that injury, I didn't get fully clear until almost four and a half years later. And they told me straight up. Now, they were worried about my artery. So I had to be in the hospital for about 2.5-3 weeks. And they were like, hey, we want to make sure. Because I was a centimeter and a half or 2.5 centimeters from losing my leg. If I was getting my leg amputated. So when I heard he dislocated his knee and they were like, oh, it's an ACL. I'm like, no, it's much. In my head, I'm like, it's much more than that. I didn't want to say anything. So I'm like, let's just see what it says. And then eventually it came out. But normally when you dislocate your kneecap, you pretty much are tearing every single thing.
Okay, so 4.5 years. This is where I'm like, 4.5 years to get cleared. Cecil hadn't played any football. Was he trying to play football again, or is he just cleared to do?
Yeah, it must have been.
I mean, that would have been like, we're talking like 2020, 2021.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was doing the post-game show with him in 2018.
And just to clear up any confusion there, too, I might be wrong on this, but Cecil at the end there said that's what happens when you dislocate your kneecap. I think he meant knee. Because remember, that was a little bit of some of the miscommunications early on, because you can dislocate a kneecap and not actually have that much damage at all. But the dislocated knee is everything's all blown out.
Pat Mahomes went back in the game with a dislocated kneecap.
Yeah,
I was told.
Yeah, so he probably told you all about it.
Yeah. They got dislocated my kneecap.
I'm the first person that's ever been injured in a football game. I got to scream.
Kneecap.
I got to scream like a 12-year-old.
This is a look.
This is
kind of scary.
No, now. The one thing I would say is that, yes, that was really bad for Cecil. And as Cecil said, his was unique. There was, you know, it was close to the artery and everything. These things can be very bad, but still and a lot of it with any kind of knee injury is how much cartilage damage was there.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what really makes rehab and everything else. If you're bone on bone, and you've tried to repair that cartilage, but everything else is unstable. It can take a long time to come back from that. So we wouldn't know, and they won't know for sure how his knee's going to respond until he starts doing the heavier rehab.
Yeah, I'm not worried about 2025 with Tank. I've already gotten to a place psychologically where Tank's not going to be on the field in 2025. If he surprises everybody, and he is, that would be amazing. My biggest concern is the effect on 2026 Tank.
Yeah.
If and when he does get the knee well enough to play football, he gets cleared, what percentage of peak Tank are we getting in 2026? Like, how much damage has been done?
Yeah.
For somebody who's so twitchy and quick,
he's
and change
like
of
a water
direction.
Bug over the ground.
Yeah.
It's hard to envision.
Yeah.
And I don't know. There's almost just no way to handicap it. Probably
yeah.
a wrong term to use there. There's no proper way to gauge or like speculate what's his percentage
yeah.
chance of coming back and being the same guy.
Yeah,
being the same guy, I'd say that's definitely lower than 100%.
Yes.
But being effective as a wide receiver, I don't know. Maybe like I'd give that a better than 50% chance.
Okay. Okay.
That's the way I'm feeling.
Okay, good. Yeah, that's the part that's concerning for me. New receiver is a huge need for this team, man. I don't know, man. When we do the mock draft injection process, the receivers that – and we do it at 7:45 every day. Seth and I go through a mock draft by one of the experts out there. The receivers are the ones that get me the most excited right now because that's a massive – position of need for this.
Yeah, no, and it's exciting. There's just so many examples in the last few years of guys that come in the late first round, in the second round, and contribute immediately.
Dude.
And if they can just have that little detail of protecting C.J. Stroud on 60% of the football plays, the pass protection is kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
If they can just clean that up, we feel great about that.
We're going to hear Nick Caserio talk about that. The O-line's been a big topic in these national media scrums with D'Amico and with Nick Caserio. We're going to hear from Caserio on that in the next segment. Quick reminder as well, we're giving away rodeo tickets in the 9 o'clock hour. We're doing it all day long. Zach Top tickets in the 9 o'clock hour. So if you're looking to get out to the rodeo on March 11th, be listening in the 9 o'clock hour for that. Another quick reminder to give us a follow on all of our social media because we'll have you covered all the rest of the week for all of our Astro stuff.
Here. Also a PSA for any of you that you run across one of these canned Long Island iced teas. Sean and I yesterday were curious. We're like, oh, I wonder if these Long Island iced teas in a can are as strong as the normal Long Island iced tea.
Two sips in.
Yeah. We were like, yeah, and Sean's no virgin. It's like he can. It's not
I'm Sean a good had, drinking condition.
When Sean can feel it after a couple of sips.
Yeah.
And it was hot, and it was the kind of day where you wanted an iced tea.
Yeah.
Maybe it happened to be a Long Island iced tea or four, but man, we were in rough shape, man. I felt bad for our boss and Adam that had to drive home with us because I don't think we were making any sense at all.
Did they throw us both in the back seat?
They threw us out of the ballpark.
Yeah, they did not throw
us. We did. We got escorted out. It was perfect, though, because you know what? Patty Smith's daughter, Kennedy Smith, is doing during spring training. She's the sideline reporter for the Nationals.
Yeah.
So we ended up talking to her
for a while.
Like a whole eighth and ninth inning.
Yeah.
But I had her whole career plan laid out for her and everything. I've got her notes on my phone and everything. I was giving her career advice with stuff that I know very little about or like anything about, actually, about just how she should proceed with her career.
The guy who did the sorry to be that guy texted back and he said, sorry to be that kind of guy, Sean, but you actually are funny. Seriously. Thank you. I appreciate that. At least he didn't say, sorry, my guy.
Oh, yeah. That's
true.
A good one. Oh, my guy.
That's on my list
my
of
guy,
things that annoy me.
You do know.
Yeah.
Do better. What are the other triggers? What triggers Sean?
I've got my list of things that annoy me right here.
Oh, here we go.
Phone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Meh.
Yeah, yeah.
Or nah.
Nah.
See, you gotta
know
do this or nah.
Okay, because of that, I've started to try to say, like, if I kind of disagree with somebody, but I'm trying to be polite about it, I'll say eh and then a comma.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
Or nah. My guy. Calling a title a chip.
Yeah, I don't like
that.
He's
gonna win the chip.
Yeah.
I hate full stop. I hate full stop. You don't know ball. Oh, the one that I added to the list a couple days ago. I'm going to keep it a buck.
Oh, like keep it 100?
Keep it 100, but they say keep it a buck.
I never liked keep it 100.
Yeah, well.
So that's even worse.
Welcome to its more annoying little brother, keep it a buck. I hate that. Cringy as hell. You can shoot me all day long with your air guns. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Heading into the 9 o'clock hour, Seth mentioned the offensive line. Nick Caserio was asked about this. The role of Cole Popovich, how is that changing? And is there a need for new faces on the O-line? Oh, I can't wait to listen to this with Caserio. We'll do that coming up next.